In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today with two guests, two political scientists from Grinnell College, Peter Hansen, Associate Professor of Political Science at Grinnell. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ben. It's great to be here.
Great to have you on the program. You are also, of course, director of the Grinnell College National Poll. The latest one has been issued just hours ago. That is the topic for the bulk of our hour. Also, Danielle Lussier is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Danielle, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We want to reach out to our listeners this hour, as we will be, courtesy of this poll and its results, are talking about a number of different political and social aspects here in the U.S. Really some fascinating poll results, how Americans feel we are living up to or not to many of the ideals of American democracy: equal treatment, free and fair elections, free speech, peaceful transfer of power, for instance. Also, a look at Joe Biden's favorability, trust ratings, thoughts on voter fraud from Americans, recent proposed changes in election security in many states, including here in Iowa. Also, COVID-related perceptions on when life will return to normal after this COVID-19 pandemic. Listeners, tell us how you feel about the state of our democracy, our democratic institutions. What makes you hopeful? What makes you fearful for the future? Join our conversation with Peter and Danielle, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. Peter, as director of the poll, it was conducted just a few days ago, wasn't it? And this samples over 1,000 U.S. adults.
That's right. We were in the field last week. We received our results on Monday morning and spent the last couple days looking at them, and now we're ready to talk about them.
Yes, and let's start off, if we could, with the principles, the foundation of American democracy: free speech, equal treatment, peaceful transfer of power, free and fair elections. What did you ask in your latest poll about those ideals and our beliefs in them?
Well, Ben, one of the things we've been thinking a lot about here at Grinnell is the health of American democracy. And one of our goals for this poll was to really take the temperature of the American people in terms of how they're feeling about American democracy right now. And just stepping back, we've been through an incredibly tumultuous year. We had a contested presidential election with allegations of fraud. We had a violent crowd storm the U.S. Capitol. And we saw a losing presidential candidate say that he lost because of fraud, despite failing to provide any evidence for that. And I think those events have really shaken the faith that a lot of people have in our democracy. And that's not a conversation we're used to having in the United States. I think here in the United States, we think of ourselves as being the benchmark for the world about how a democracy should be run. Mm-hmm. So our approach in this poll was to ask our respondents about four major democratic principles. And first, we wanted to ask them how much they valued those principles. And second, we wanted to ask whether they felt the United States was living up to them. Mm-hmm. So those four principles were as follows. First, that all have the right to free speech, even if others are offended. Second, that power is transferred peacefully when one party is voted out of office. Third, that free and fair elections are conducted without fraud. And fourth, that all people are treated equally regardless of race, religion, or other traits. We think about those principles as being the core of what it means for a country to be a democracy. And what was notable is that overwhelmingly, our respondents said that these principles were very important to them. So our respondents, 82% and higher, said that these principles were very important to them. But when asking whether or not the United States lives up to those principles, whether or not they fit the United States today, a majority of our respondents said it was just a fair fit or a poor fit, our two lowest categories. So majorities say that this is not a country where all have the right to free speech, even if others are offended, or that we're successfully transferring power peacefully. And those are really troubling indications. You know, one of the reasons I was really excited to partner with Danielle for this survey is because Danielle is an expert about democracy globally and has a lot of insight into what the kind of warning signs we're seeing in the United States mean about the health of democracy overall.
And Danielle, jump in here, because are these numbers that Peter just cited there about failing the grade here in terms of living up to our core principles of a democracy in America, are they warning signs?
I think they are. I think they're really quite disconcerting. I think, you know, we have to take a step back and say that globally, democracy has been in the retreat for about 15 years. And this is after the biggest expansion of democracy globally in the 20th century, right? So in the 20th century, democracy became the only game in town. It was the regime type that countries aspired to and tried to build. And we saw a meaningful movement away from democracy beginning in this particular century. And a lot of the times, you know, to build on a point that Peter made, you know, Americans are used to sort of, we're not used to thinking about our democracies being unhealthy. Right? We've existed under a single constitutional order for over 200 years. And so often when we think about the vulnerabilities to democracy, we're thinking about other countries. We're thinking about countries that don't have that deep history, countries that maybe had a longer authoritarian history. Yet at the same time, when we look at the types of factors that tend to chip away at democracy and move it into a place where its survival is no longer taken for granted, we're seeing some really interesting warning signs here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And this really matches what I think perhaps you, Peter, and other Americans think, that when we matches with the idea that up until this past year, most notably this past January, the attack on the Capitol, we took a lot of these principles for granted. That would you say, Danielle, that America was invulnerable, that we did not even really need to think about these principles or upholding them because they were such strong pillars?
Right. So a lot of the times when we think about democracy, we're thinking really about the rule of law and the way that certain principles are built into the code of how our political institutions run, right? How we run elections, how we ensure that the law is being applied equally across different groups. But a key other factor that perhaps Americans haven't been paying as much attention to are the norms that make sure that those institutions are functioning. So there are two particular norms that I would say have played a very important role in American democracy survival over time. And the first one is the sort of mutual recognition of the legitimacy of opponents. So seeing how it is that your political opponents, seeing them as a loyal opposition and not as an enemy, right? And then a second factor, of course, has been restraint, that when you have politicians in power, they're not using the levers of power that are in front of them and that they have available to them to do things that really just serve their short-term interests in ways that maybe go against the spirit of the law. So those norms have been working more or less without very severe damage for a very long period of time to make sure that the rule of law and how elections happen has stayed more or less in place. But we've seen, I would say, meaningful erosion of some of these norms. And that's where some of the data that we have with the Grinnell poll becomes, to me, really, really interesting, right? So if we take some of these questions, right, free and fair elections are conducted without fraud, okay? We've got 52% of respondents saying that the United States is doing just a fair job at that or a poor job of that. And yet, if we look even further at that particular data point, we see also a really meaningful difference in terms of how different supporters, partisan supporters, view that, right? So Democrats and voters for Biden tend to say that, you know, this is not a problem right now, that the United States is doing a pretty good job at holding free and fair elections without fraud. But Trump voters and Republicans don't see it that way. So we have this situation where we've got these longstanding rules, but we have a breakdown in norms. And that breakdown in norms is being reflected in how different groups in the population are interpreting the events that they're seeing around them.
Mm-hmm. And we can point to the news from Iowa, for example, among a national wave of Republican-led states whose leaders have expressed concerns about the integrity of the 2020 elections, obviously taking their cue from the former president and his false claims that the election was stolen from him. If you've just joined us, Danielle Lussier is with us of Grinnell College, Peter Hansen of Grinnell as well, two political scientists. We're talking about some fascinating findings of the latest Grinnell College national poll, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Let's join Cheryl. Cheryl is listening in Des Moines, I see on my screen. Welcome to the program, Cheryl. What is this? What ideas, what concerns does this raise in your mind?
Well, I have lived in Iowa most of my life. My first ballot, because I went to school out of state, college, was by mail, and I had no question about the integrity of that ballot. My last one was by mail because of the COVID, and I had no question of the integrity of that ballot. Here in Iowa, and Pate, our Secretary of State Pate, announced that this was a safe and fair election, and it was. And now the Iowa Republicans, and I'm a Democrat, true, but they have lockstepped with the big lie that Trump pushed nationwide of voting irregularities, and there may have been some, but there's nothing on the wide scale, and definitely not in Iowa, that called for any modification of our laws at all. And I am deeply disturbed by this trend in Iowa to repress the vote by the Republicans because they're losing membership and they want to remain in power, and I believe that to be so. Mm-hmm. And because of nationwide, like Georgia, with the ridiculous, you can't hand out water to people in long line after they've made these extremely repressive laws. And this is not a trend that any state should be following. They should be making sure, yes, safety and security, but this is not about safety and security. This is about voter repression, pure and simple.
Okay, Cheryl, thank you for your view from Des Moines. Of course, Republicans would say this is about voter integrity, about making Iowa election laws uniform across the state. Peter, there you heard a passionate voice from Cheryl in Des Moines. You connected with a lot of passionate voices across the country. React to what she had to say and your how it matches up with your poll results.
Well, I think there are a couple of points to make here. I mean, first, just as a matter of principle, I mean, I think political scientists will tell you that one of the hallmarks of a strong democracy is easy access to the ballot. We want voters to be able to participate. We encourage them to participate, and we view that participation as a sign of a healthy democracy. And any attempt to make it harder to vote, I think, is always a matter of concern. You can think about the project of the civil rights movement in the 1960s, right, being to make ballot access easier, to allow African-American voters, in that case, have access to the ballot. So the kinds of laws we're seeing across the country now, which are, you know, as a group making it harder to vote, are certainly something that I think are concerning. I think what's particularly concerning is that they're being adopted in the absence of real evidence that fraud occurred. I mean, there are allegations of fraud occurred. Certainly they were made by former President Trump, but those allegations were debunked by his own Department of Justice. Now, we did ask about this in the poll. So one of our questions was, we said a number of states have recently proposed to change the way they conduct elections. We asked people whether they favored various forms of changes. Mm-hmm. We asked if they would favor eliminating laws that allow voters to vote by mail. A majority opposed this. 56% of people opposed eliminating laws that allow voters to vote by mail. Only 34% supported that. So that was, I think, a pretty clear signal from the American people that they value having a variety of ways to participate in an election to make their voice heard and to cast their vote.
This is pushback from constituents of both parties in this view of changes to voting laws?
Yes, so there is, that's right, it's bipartisan opposition. There are partisan differences. There are different, you know, that Republicans are more supportive of restricting voting by mail than Democrats, but that was bipartisan opposition to eliminating those laws.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just to review, Iowa's election law changed. It was signed into law by the governor earlier this month. The law in Iowa cutting Iowa's early voting period from 29 to 20 days. Polls now closing at 8 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. Also, one of the other major parts of this, significantly tightening the rules for when absentee ballots must be received by county auditors. They must now arrive by the time polls close in order to be counted. Previously, it was just that you had to have it placed in the mail the day before Election Day so that it could be post-stamped, as long as it would arrive by noon the following Monday. So those are the changes there. We have so much to get to on this poll, but I want to ask you about the way forward here, considering the results of the poll numbers. Perhaps, Danielle, on you, this question. If a significant number of Republicans have lost faith in our elections because of claims of fraud, but we know factually there's no evidence of widespread fraud, how do we restore faith? If the truth doesn't bear out these beliefs, what is the next step?
I mean, I think that's the real big question, in the sense that, you know, a line that I frequently say is that, you know, the only thing you need to agree to in democracy are the rules of the game. That's the only thing you need to agree to. We don't have to agree on any element of policy. We just have to agree to the rules of the game. Once you agree to the rules, the winner wins and the loser goes home. And so what's particularly disconcerting to me when we think about how we're seeing a very partisan interpretation of this information, it's not just Trump, okay? But we're seeing those claims of fraud and this claims of steal also has helped to propel other individuals into elected office. And when you have individuals who have access to elected office and they are using that office and they're using their access to that office not to uphold the underlying constitutional principles, but actually to change the rules of the game, that's when you see democratic erosion. That is how democracies tend to die. So that's the piece to me that is most disconcerting. So then the question is of the way forward. Well, there's a couple things we might think about. One is, to what extent do members of political parties want to hold their own members of party accountable? And that's perhaps, you know, I would say the trickiest piece. One argument that we would say on a global scale, when we think about things that tend to contribute to democratic erosion, is that when populists who tend to have an anti-establishment rhetoric become mainstream political actors, it's much harder to rein them in. That it's easier to rein them in at an earlier piece of the gatekeeping, right? Keeping them from getting a spot at the top of a ticket that they will then be able to use to gain access to elected office.
If you've just joined us, Danielle Lussier with us of Grinnell College, Peter Hansen as well, two political scientists talking about the latest Grinnell College national poll. Before our break, Peter, I wonder if you could introduce us into some questioning you did in this latest poll just released today about race relations. With this background, of course, this week, prosecutors laying out their case against Derek Chauvin, the fired Minneapolis police officer charged in the death of George Floyd, charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. He has pleaded not guilty. You looked at Americans' views about race relations. What did you ask, and what did you find?
Well, Ben, we asked about this in two different ways. Actually, as part of our democracy battery that we've just been talking about, we asked people whether they believe that all people should be treated equally, regardless of race, religion, or other traits. 92% said yes. So clearly, Americans really value equal treatment for everyone. But in a different question, we asked them to tell us whether they thought that race relations in the United States were mostly good or mostly bad. 64% of people said they were mostly bad. And that was across the board. That was Democrats and Republicans, people of every racial identity. This was a universal assessment that we're in a very difficult place in regard to race relations. And I think that's just a reflection of this constant drumbeat we are seeing in the news of really difficult stories about hate crimes against Asian Americans or the beginning of Derek Chauvin's trial. I think what's important there is that there's a universal recognition that we've got this work to do. I mean, it's actually, I think, a good sign that we're not divided on that question. Mm-hmm. But clearly, we're facing some very steep challenges here.
Mm-hmm. Weigh in on that, Danielle, the race relations questions here. What are your thoughts?
You know, I agree with Peter. I think that to me, the something that really stood out and I thought was really quite interesting was this gap between how people viewed this question, all people are treated equally regardless of race, religion, or other traits, in terms of how important that is as a democratic principle. You know, 92% of respondents said that was very important, and another 5 said it was somewhat important. Only 2% of our respondents did not think this was an important characteristic of democracy. And yet, 68% say that that the U.S. is doing just a poor job, a very fair or poor job. You know, that's very discouraging. Yet there's part of me that wants to see it just the tiniest bit of optimism in this, in the sense that we can see that this is a case where the U.S., you know, Americans are giving their government a poor grade on this, but they aspire to something better. Right. Mm-hmm. This is not a case where people are looking around at the current state of affairs and saying, this is normal for democracy. This is a good thing for democracy.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment after a short break. We're picking apart the results of the latest Grinnell College National Poll released just this morning with the poll's director, Peter Hansen of Grinnell College, and Danielle Lussier, Associate Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. We'd like to have you join our conversation if you'd like to weigh in on any of these topics that we've been discussing this hour. Tell us how you feel about the state of our democracy, race relations, our democratic institutions. What makes you feel hopeful or fearful for the future? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Ben Kiefer with Peter Hansen and Danielle Lussier of Grinnell College, back in just a moment with more of River to River.
If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer on this Politics Wednesday. Today, Peter Hansen is with us of Grinnell College and his colleague Danielle Lussier of Grinnell. We're talking about the latest Grinnell College National Poll covering a wide range of political and social topics. We'll touch on a few of those in the second half hour, and maybe we'll get some other political news there, analysis on that a little bit later. This poll conducted just last week over a series of days, a number of days, with over 1,000 U.S. adults, 18 or older, And in our last half hour, if you were listening, we were talking about majorities of Americans in both parties opposing three sample changes to voting laws indicated in this polling, eliminating laws allowing vote by mail, eliminating early voting, eliminating laws that require voters to show a photo ID. To finish up on this, Peter, to you, in Congress, as opposed to what's happening in many states, including Iowa, Democrats, President Biden, supporting sweeping voting rights law changes that would set sort of a nationwide floor on ballot access, nullifying many voting restrictions we're seeing pop up in the states. Does this mean the Democrats, according to your polling, have some sort of tailwind at their backs with a majority of support for their proposals, or is that going too far?
Well, I don't know that we can reach that conclusion from these data. I mean, my major takeaway point from our question on changes to the electoral system is that voters are cautious about making changes. They prefer to leave the current laws in place. So they prefer to leave voter ID laws in place, but they also want to be able to vote by mail. I do think, though, there's another lesson here that that you've raised by pointing to what's happening in Congress, and that is access to the ballot has become a partisan issue in the United States. And that's a place I think we should never be. I think Democrats and Republicans ought to be able to agree on the fact that Americans need to be able to vote easily, safely, and securely. And this goes back to a point Danielle made earlier about all of us needing to agree on the rules of the game. And if we can't do that, it's going to be very hard to move forward together as a country.
Let's move on to some other areas in your polling. The favorability of the new president and vice president. Danielle, would you be able to talk about that? Do you have those figures? Otherwise, I'll turn to Peter. That's fine as well.
I'm happy to give it a go. I mean, one of the things that I think is particularly interesting here is that when we look at Joe Biden has a favorability rating, and according to our poll, of 49%, and that's certainly fine, but it hasn't moved that much from when we were looking at Joe Biden as a Democratic nominee for president in the August 2020 Grinnell poll, or Joe Biden as the former vice president, which is how we polled in earlier versions of the poll. You know, so he's moved up from the mid-40s to the top 40s, but he's not necessarily sort of winning favorability by storm here. Kamala Harris comes in at, you know, 44% of favorability rating, which is, again, also, I would say, you know, meaningful. It's actually really quite comparable to how Mike Pence did as vice president of the United States. So I would say the big takeaway message here is that, you know, our current elected leaders are coming in as favorable, but not so much so that there's not discontent, if you will, or maybe a lack of confidence in their abilities.
Right. And this is about 70 days into the Biden-Harris administration. Peter, weigh in on this, too. You also look not only at favorability, but also trust in this new administration.
That's right. Well, we really wanted to take the temperature of the American people on the new administration as it gets started. And I think that Joe Biden brings two big assets to the table. One is that favorability rating, which Danielle was pointing out. More people view him favorably than unfavorably. But I think perhaps even more important than that, we asked our respondents, we said, we're going to mention some individuals and groups of people. Please tell us how much you trust them to tell you the truth when they talk about problems facing the country. And here, Joe Biden did very, very well. 56% of people said they trusted him to tell them the truth about problems facing the country. So I think he starts this administration generally well-liked, although we see the usual partisan divisions there. But beyond that, he's trusted. And that is a change from the previous administration. When I think one of the problems Donald Trump always had was that his word was not trusted. But we actually see that in our current poll. Because we also asked about trust of Donald Trump. And in his case, 54% of people had low trust in what he said. So I think that puts us in a different place in the country when we're trying to deal with really difficult problems like the COVID crisis, getting Americans vaccinated, And what Biden brings to the table, I think, is a more trusted voice to help guide Americans through these times.
Mm-hmm. And Peter, your polling did bring out a huge degree of trust in our scientists in this COVID time. It explains the or supports the idea that the reason why Tony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, is a trusted and popular figure.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Scientists actually did the best in our trust ratings. So 82% of people have either high or medium trust in scientists when they speak about problems facing the country. And I think that is particularly helpful when dealing with things like COVID, where what Americans, I think, are looking for is not always a politician to give them a recommendation, but a trusted neutral source. And so I think scientists have a really important role to play there.
Mm-hmm. President Biden, of course, promising to administer 100 million vaccines by his 100th day in office. The U.S. surpassed that goal several days ago on March 19th, almost 6 weeks ahead of schedule. The president has since said he hopes for 200 million doses to be put in arms by his 100th day. That will be in about 30 days. It does appear that we are on pace to meet that goal. 70 days now into the Biden presidency, 29% of Americans had been given at least one shot here in Iowa, slightly better than that. We have 31% of Iowans having received at least one shot. Peter, tell us, what questions did you ask about the vaccination campaign? What did you want to find out there?
Well, we asked two questions. The first was we asked people whether they had already received at least one dose of the vaccine, whether they plan to get vaccinated, or whether they did not plan to get vaccinated. And I think the really good news here is that two-thirds of people said they'd already received one shot or they plan to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a lot of discussion in the media about what's called vaccine hesitancy, you know, this worry that a lot of people are going to say no to the vaccine. We don't really see that in our data. It's a minority of people who are indicating that reluctance.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Ben.
No, and just that's very important, because to reach this herd immunity between 70 and 90% is what scientists say we need to reach in order to stem this and to importantly, stop the transmission and stop the variants from being produced, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm sure that policymakers want to do better than the two-thirds that we're seeing here. They're going to want to chip away at that remaining third of people who are saying no. But I think this is a very good starting point and certainly better figures than we could imagine we might see.
Mm-hmm. What about when you asked, and Danielle, maybe you can get to this, about the long sought after view, vision of when will things return to some sense of normalcy?
Right. So we asked, when do you think you'll feel you return to normal life? Within the next few months, by the end of the year, and more than a year, or never? Or have you already returned to normal life? And, you know, this is the part that I would say is a little bit more discouraging in the sense that a third of respondents said that we would see normality, you know, by the end of the year. Not sooner than that. But another interesting part of the story here is that 18% of respondents, you know, almost one in five respondents, said they've already returned to normal life. And I would say that these findings are a little bit head-scratching for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, if one-fifth of people have already returned to normal life, when we know that this pandemic continues to rage and that we have not reached herd immunity, that's going to make it much harder to suppress the pandemic. And then, of course, the other is that sense of this pandemic's carrying, it has a long tail for people, right? Even if we're moving ahead on that vaccination campaign, you know, still a third of the population thinks it's going to be a long time before we get back to normal.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined our conversation, talking with Danielle Lussier and Peter Hansen of Grinnell College, two political scientists, Peter, director of the Grinnell College National Poll, the sixth one. You've only been in operation for a couple of years. This is the sixth national poll, and some interesting findings we're not going to be able to talk about in depth here. Before we move on, Please point to some other poll results if we could briefly have you bring those out. There's so many fascinating findings here.
You know, I think if there is one finding that just jumped out at me, it has to do with confidence in our elections. And this takes us back to an earlier point in our conversation, Ben, but it's so striking. In every single poll we fielded, you mentioned that this is our sixth. So for about 2 years, we've been asking Americans whether they are confident that their votes will be counted accurately. And typically, you know, early when in our polling, Republicans were the most confident. So in our first polls, 81% of Republicans said they were very confident or somewhat confident that votes will be counted correctly. About a year later, 85% of Republicans said they were very confident. And then the 2020 election comes. So in our poll, which we fielded in early September of 2020, as Donald Trump was building up his rhetoric about potential fraud in the election, the number among Republicans dropped to 67%. In our latest poll, it's 36% of Republicans are confident in the voting process. And that's just enormously troubling, right? We can't allow the winner of elections to become a matter of partisan dispute. You know, one of the things we've had going for us in the United States is that when the Secretary of State announces a winner, everybody says, well, you know, either my candidate won or my candidate lost. And now what we have is actually this question of who even won becoming a matter of partisan dispute.
Right. And in past years, all of our lifetimes, we've perhaps viewed that peaceful transfer of power as a mere formality and merely, Peter, not really that important. We have been shown how important it is when a loser at the polls graciously accepts defeat.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. We've taken a lot of things for granted in the United States. You know, I mean, I think for decades, we've had a very secure election system. We've had a peaceful transfer of power for really the duration of our history. And so what we saw in 2020 was really unusual. And in my view, it was really just a body blow to our democratic system. And those effects are just continuing to reverberate, and they're reverberating in the changes we're seeing to elections right now, but also just in this loss of confidence that people have in these basic elements of our system of government.
Before we end this hour, I'd like to ask you about a couple of other political developments in the news. This contentious congressional district outcome in Iowa District, Congressional District 2. No quick resolution there. It's gaining attention. The latest developments in briefs filed with the U.S. Committee on House Administration on Monday, both Republican Representative Marionette Miller-Meeks and the Democrat Rita Hart argued they have democracy on their side as they made their latest claims in this second congressional district outcome. At issue state officials declaring Representative Miller-Meeks the winner in one of the closest contests in American history, winning by 6 votes out of nearly 400,000. Hart refusing to concede the race, pointing to 22 discarded ballots. She said that would have made her the winner if counted. Hart appealing to the U.S. House to step in and overrule the state and seat her instead. Danielle, I'd like your thoughts after we hear this from the attorney representing Rita Hart on the challenge. The Hart campaign maintains that if those votes are counted, it would swing the election in Hart's favor. Here is the attorney representing Rita Hart in her challenge. This is Mark Elias.
We have an election that right now the margin between the two candidates is 6 votes. It is among the closest elections in our country's history. And when you set aside all of the procedural issues and niceties about where the case is and where the case is going and where what happens next in the contest, you need to not lose sight of the voters. This is fundamentally about them and their rights. And who's going to fight to make sure that they didn't go to the trouble in the middle of a pandemic to cast a ballot only to have it not count?
Mark Elias, attorney representing Democrat Rita Hart. Democrats spent months, Danielle, pushing back on the president, former president's falsehoods about a stolen election, including his claim that Congress had the power to just unilaterally overturn the results. And now we have this here, where the House is being asked by the Democrats, by the Democratic candidate here, to overdo just that.
So this is exactly an example of the concern that I have going forward about American democracy and the role that agreeing to the rules of the game comes from. So I appreciate, you know, the point Elias just said, you have to set aside procedural issues. This is exactly about procedural issues. We agree to particular rules and that certain rules should be upheld, right? So, you know, rules that are at stake here that I think are particularly relevant is the fact that there was a bipartisan panel of state officials that certified the results following a district-wide recount. Anytime that you have an election, even the most pristinely run election, there are going to be instances where the officials responsible for running and administering an election have to make a decision about something. Let's say an absentee ballot that has had part of the envelope torn, a ballot that's opened up and it's smudged. Maybe it's not entirely clear. And because ballots are anonymous, there's no way to go back and check with a voter that their intended vote was cast as it looks to the person counting the vote. So you are always, even in the most cleanly run election, going to have instances where there are certain ballots that are not going to be counted because they don't meet sort of basic standards to be able to determine certainly that they weren't tampered with. And that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about, though I recognize it's a very, very slim margin here, we're talking about a situation where there are procedures in place to deal with these situations. And if you had a bipartisan panel of state officials certifying these results and saying, okay, these met our standards, and that's still not being, and the question really to me comes back to a case of federal versus state rights, right? That there was already a procedure that was in place, and now we're looking to overturn a particular procedure.
Do you see it the same way, Peter?
Well, I guess I have a slightly different view. You know, it is within the authority of the House of Representatives to determine what members to seat, and they do have the authority to review challenges to the election of their members. And I think there's an important distinction to make here about, you know, when I think it's helpful to review an election result and when it's not helpful. And what's distinct about the Miller-Meeks-Hart race is that the margin is 6 votes, right? If there's any time when you take a close look at an election, it's in this kind of circumstance, and you make sure all the votes were counted correctly. And I agree with Danielle, there's a set of procedures you follow, you apply those, and you just look to see that everything was counted accurately. Now, that is a world of difference from losing an election by tens of thousands of votes at a state level, for example, in the presidential race, and claiming that somehow fraud stole it from you. The margin in the presidential race was so big that it's simply not plausible that the sort of routine errors we see in election could have changed the outcome. You know, in the Miller-Meeks-Hart race, it is plausible. I'm fine with the House looking at it. I actually think the Democrats as a party are not going to want to overturn this election because they've spent the last months stressing the need to let states make these decisions. And I think politically, this is just something they don't want to do right now. That's my guess anyway. But I do think when a margin is this close, it is reasonable to carefully look at the results to see if they're accurate.
Right, but Peter, also time is passing. You know, the terms of the representatives are only 2 years long. How much damage does it do to the faith in the process to have, say, Representative Miller Meeks serving in her role for months and then remove her possibly? Isn't time as it marches on a real factor here?
Well, it's certainly nobody's ideal outcome here. And I think this is a matter that needs to be settled soon. And hopefully that's the House of Representatives will make its decision very soon.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, I think the final word to you, we have less than a minute. How do you think this will come out? Do you think that the Democrats will in the House will shy away from overturning this and unseating Miller Meeks?
I certainly think they don't. They don't want to overturn this. I agree with all of the points that Peter made. I really think, though, that they want to come across as defending institutions and not particular individuals. And right now, because there's meaningful partisan divide nationally on the fusion of institutions and individuals, I think they're tasked with a really hard job.
Okay. We want to thank the two of you for joining us this hour, giving us some insights into the latest Grinnell College national poll. It's Director Peter Hansen with us and Danielle Lussier. Danielle on our program for the first time. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you for your company, your insights, and your conversation. Peter and Danielle, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben. It was great to be here.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Thank you.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll look at Iowa's infrastructure needs in light of the big infrastructure package that President Biden is introducing today in Pittsburgh. River to River, produced by Catherine Perkins today. Technical assistance in a big way from Rick Brewer. Thanks, Rick. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.